dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello everyone and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 238 and I'm feeling great. It's Joseph Uwadiway and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, everyone's favorite critic, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, Iffy, what's good is me, because I didn't murder anyone today, and I should have, and I could have, and I would have gotten away with it too, because my cable and my internet simultaneously crapped out today, and it's just been one thing after another, and anybody who deals with the services that provide these things to your house knows that everything is a nightmare, everything's difficult, and everything's complicated, but I'm still here, damn it, even though neither is working yet, but I'm going to get there. I'm going to make this work, and I'm going to continue not murdering anybody because I'm what's good.
Show us proof of life that Dave is still alive.
Did Dave also make it through?
Yes. We the world wants to know.
Dave, bless his heart, has just been like giving me space and making me breathe and doing all the things that a supportive spouse does.
Aw, good stuff. Dave's also good. Double good. You're double both good.
You know who else is double good? This person who is known across the world as the Queen of the Midwest, the super programmer, producer, Drea Clark, was good.
Yes, the phrase Midwest definitely means a lot to people in every single country. and then they think of me. So what's good with me is there is a little town near the town where my parents retired to in Northern California called Healdsburg. And last week, one of their teachers set up as just like, this will be a fun thing for the kids to do, a hotline that you can call into and get pep talks from kindergartners. And they have all these like pre-recorded messages. They're in English and in Spanish. And it is so freaking adorable and just so positive and wonderful. And it's one of those things, like, I think they just meant is like, oh, a nice little local project for these, maybe some parents will call in or whatever. And it, like, thousands and thousands of calls. So they started to GoFundMe and they got like sponsorship that's tied to some sort of charity donation. All that said, I urge you, go get a pep talk from a kindergartner. You can do that by dialing 707-998-8410. The best part, it's pre-recorded. You don't have to engage. You just get all that good bounty. Yeah. This is why I don't have kids. I realize the positives in this are like me saying, it's great. You don't have to give anything back to the children. Oh, Lord.
Virtual adorability is the best kind.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ooh, real solid, real good. But you want to know what's even solider and even gooder? Ingo Kang, TV critic at the Washington Post. How you doing? It's glad to have you back. And what's good?
Woohoo, Ingo!
Well, thank you for saying I am gooder than Drea. I agree with this assessment.
Boo!
I will supplant her as the Queen of the Midwest very soon. She won't know it's coming. I am not like a trendy food person. It's not like, I like good food. I don't care about trendy food, but I think a food that was probably trendy like 5 years ago. And I am here to sing its praises. Birria tacos, where have you been my life?
Mm. Ooh.
Yes.
I like that.
Is everyone like already like very familiar with them?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So yeah.
I mean, I guess if you were from a place like Los Angeles instead of the Midwest. Oh wait. Oh wait, where are you born and raised? What? LA?
Born in Seoul, actually, so I don't know what you're talking about. But I was raised in Los Angeles, and I live in the Bay Area now, and I don't get Mexican food that often because I think it's just so much inferior to food Mexican food in LA. But yes, birria tacos, meat basically like in its most juicy form. Dripping out of the tortilla. Nothing better.
There is this Thai Australian chef that I love named Marion Graspy who just did a recipe for birria ramen. And I do not cook, but I want that in my mouth. It's a real conundrum. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I think you can just buy some birria and also buy birria, some ramen and then like put them together.
That is exactly how I would manufacture something like that. Yeah. Hey, Iffy, what's good with you, my guy?
Ooh, what's good with me? Well, you know, I gotta say, I discovered I went to my favorite local coffee shop, Kumquat. Shout out to y'all. And they had this masala chai concentrate, and it's been great. That's all I've had all day. I think I might make it through the whole bottle today and will not sleep tonight.
So but, wait, do you mix it with like hot water?
It's or, you're supposed to mix like it with one milk? Part chai, one part milk. So yeah, I have that, and I bought the barista blend of my Oatly, and I've just been cranking that all day.
That sounds so good.
I had the extreme moment today because I love Fly by Jing. If you haven't got Fly by Jing and their chili crisp, it's great. It has the Sichuan peppers in it, and you get that nice tingliness if you like that. So they just made like the Sichuan oil. And I put it in my dinner and I didn't realize, you know, I have a real loose pour. And so like, I'm sorry,
those words do not sound right together.
Well, just know I just wasn't able to feel my mouth and I was drinking chai at the same time. Oh, so it was like the spice of the pepper and the spice of the chai. And like Sichuan, it doesn't burn. It just has this tingly, vibrate-y feeling. But it just was like my mouth was completely numb. And I was like, I don't think this is recommended, but it is. I'm having a good time.
It's the birria ramen of your day.
Yes, exactly. Birria, we got to do a birria field trip. I owe everyone a spa day, so maybe we'll start off with birria. Duke, go to Wee Spa, get our skin scrubbed down, and then you know, who knows? Maybe watch a movie, maybe.
Oh, it would be fitting.
Yes.
But first, we're going to sit in the car for 3 hours.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. See, you know I love a segue because this is going to be our last show before the Oscars, and we're going to discuss Best Picture nominee Drive My Car. And later on, we're going to hand out some Dream Oscars to favorite unsung comedies. But first, it's time for Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we go through the movie news and decide as a group if it's important and if we care. Sometimes we're just talking about it. But, I mean, that's the best part, right?
I'm going to go first. And the best part of Itadic is whether or not we ever actually answer those questions that we pose for each one. Please follow along at home. All right. West Side Story's Rachel Zegler was not invited to the Oscars, surprisingly. The world found out this week via Twitter that starring in a film nominated for 7 Oscars apparently is not enough to get you invited to the ceremony. Rachel Zegler, who played Maria in West Side Story, which we discussed in detail last week, revealed that she wasn't going to the Oscars because, despite her best efforts, she could not secure an invitation. The story prompted internet outcry, and now the Academy has invited her to be a presenter. Is this important? Do you care? I wish the world could see the dead eyes Ingu Kang is giving me.
I'm just curious if she's going to be able to sit down at any point, or will she only be allowed to stand or present?
Well, is it easier to get a presenter slot than it is to get an actual seat in the hall? Is that the deal?
Yeah, because presenters, how we've done it at the different award shows that I've worked at, there's often, if you're not a nominee or with one of the nominated allocated seats, there are presenter seats in-house, but a lot of them opt to not take them because honestly, then they just get to fluff around in the green room the whole time, go on stage, be admired by millions, and they don't have to be uncomfortable in like the wedge they don't have seats
to be,
or whatever.
They don't have to pretend to be happy for other people.
Exactly. What I'll say about this, and I'm excited because I feel I'm going to take the contrarian. Like, everyone was kind of surprised of what? Why wasn't she invited? And certainly, I'm thrilled that this young actress can go and be a part of it. But also, it's a 3,000-seat theater. It's not a small place. But there it is a finite amount of seats. And also, do those same people care about, like, the two young ladies who played Venus and Serena Williams in King Richard, which is also nominated for a bunch of stuff? And I guarantee we're not also invited and are probably not presenting. Like, there's so many movies. Is anyone caring if Cody Smith McPhee?
Well, he's a nominee.
Yeah, okay. Also, I absolutely care about whether that praying mantis of a boy, like, is in that film. How dare you?
I think here's...
That's just because you want to know where he is at all times.
Here's another reason to not have 10 Best Picture nominees, because then there aren't enough seats for all the cast members.
But it makes sense, like, for the award shows that I work at, how it typically works is the nominees get a ticket... And then the studio divvies gets them up. A certain amount of seats, and then they divvy up the rest. And, you know, how many freaking people worked on West Side Story? And once you're, and that's a huge ass cast, too.
She's a lead, Drea.
A female lead. Yes, but I get where it comes from in terms of
the logistics
you either
of it
invite
all.
A bunch of people or you don't.
Do we honestly believe there's not one Spielberg phone call that could have solved this whole thing?
Right, but is it fair that Spielberg could have called?
Well, as long as he's not calling for Ansel Elgort, yes.
Is the young woman from Drive My Car going to be there?
Yeah.
We don't know.
I know. Twitter found out. They made it happen. And then much too late next week, you know, Twitter's going to find out about this, the Williams sisters, and they're going to try the campaign much too late. And we'll be like, ah.
Yeah. I will say it wouldn't have surprised me if she was on their list to ask to present anyway. She was just going to be an easy get. So they were probably trying to get the bigger names first. Sorry, I'm getting real inside baseball with the awards talk, which can't be what anybody wants.
I would like an oral history of Rachel Zegler trying to find an Oscar dress in like a 24-hour period.
She had a couple on hold before the nominations came out, I'm sure.
Exactly. Oh,
yeah. Well, let's keep the ball rolling and talk about our boy Danny Ratty. Daniel Radcliffe isn't interested in going back to Hogwarts. In an interview with the New York Times last week, the star of The Lost City and Weird, the Al Yankovic Story, and oh right, 8 movies about a wizard kid, said he's not interested in reprising the role of Harry Potter. Radcliffe said he felt he'd made it out of Potter okay and didn't want to revisit the character right now, but he left the window open a crack, pointing out that maybe in 30 or 40 years, maybe when, you know, J.K. Rowling gets it together, he'll change his mind. That isn't part of the quote. That is an iffy addition. I feel like this is a nice way to say she tripping, but I'm not going to drag her like y'all want me to. Is this important? Do you care?
I think maybe he thinks in 30 or 40 years she'll be dead.
Yeah.
I think he really nailed that on the head, iffy. Like, I think that's exactly what's happening right now. Also, he does not seem like he really cares about acting against the green screen ever again. Leave him alone.
Yeah, he want to be out in the elements.
I don't know how much the JK of it affected what he's doing. I think he's someone who is... Like, it was a big deal when they just... When HBO... And Warner did that Return to Hogwarts thing they just did. They did not have him secured, like, the whole time. It was a very big... Like, it would have been a weird, creaky bus without him. But he's just not wanting to revisit things. And I think that would be true whether or not she was the garbage monster is.
No child star wants to get stuck in the dirndl, you know? Like, nobody wants to be trapped in the cute kid thing that they did. And so this is a guy who did Equus on Broadway, for God's sake. He's, like, doing everything possible to be like, I got more arrows in the quiver than that, you know? So, yeah, of course he's in no hurry to go back.
If Warner Brothers really wants to get him back, they should offer him a role as, like, a farting corpse at Hogwarts and then see if he bites then.
Vis-a-vis the green screen thing, if he Ingu, I saw The Lost City, and believe me, there's plenty of it in that movie.
All right.
But I do think, you know, kind of the picks that he has had in his post-Potter career. I think he really is like kind of like, no, I'm kind of like in my auteur bag, and I don't want to be like a popcorn guy. I want to like talk to a dead guy on a beach. I want to be in flip-flops.
I want to play Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
Like an auteur.
I think he really is like, I just want to do fun shit for me, you know, with Let It Be Steve Buscemi on TBS.
He's trying to have his like best Kristen Stewart post-Twilight career. Let him have it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
He is, and good for him. And also, talented people who become multimillionaires by the time they're 16 or however. I mean, to be like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm just going to do what I want. And what he wants is not a whole bag of drugs every day.
Yeah.
He wants to do like interesting performances, and so good for him. Also, the phrase that he made it out of Potter okay, is it? Mm-hmm. Congrats, because that is one of the lasting karmic balances of that franchise. Is on the one hand, you have the like nightmare person that is J.K. Rowling, and then on the other hand, a franchise that like launched numerous careers. And none of them have appeared to be, like, even, what's it, Harry Melfin? Dudley. Dursley.
Oh, right.
He's incredible. Like, anyway, great actors, not a dud in the bunch, as it seems.
So, speaking of anti-queer people, a few weeks ago here on It a Dick, we told you that Disney's mishandling of the Don't Say Gay Bill situation was important, and we did care, and apparently we're not the only ones. In the past few weeks, employees at Pixar and other Disney companies have reported seeing gay relationships scrubbed from projects. Now, one such moment is reportedly back on, a kiss between two female characters in Pixar's forthcoming Lightyear. Is this important? Do you care?
Is this important? No, because the money they're going to make from this, they're still giving to anti-LGBTQ folks.
Well, I think what is important and ties in is the day that we're recording this, a lot of employees of the Disney company, especially on the creative side, walked off and did a massive walkout to protest, specifically protesting the company's response to the Florida bill, and like hundreds of them left the Burbank offices. If their whole thing is like, oh no, like we're going to have queer characters. And I think this is like a random character voiced by what's her from?
Uzo Aduba.
Thank you. From the show. I can't think of Orange is the New Black. Woof. Yeah. So
good
like
job, Mom.
Fine character moment. I'm sure I know whatever. We don't get that program in the Midwest.
From that show.
That one, you know, that one that I like so much with the eyes.
She's a professional.
Words are my tool. But I do think you tie that in. It's, you know, it is that kind of like, oh, you can have this moment, clap on the head. But I do think there's a lot of people who work for the Disney company. You know, we saw this also with Netflix, like employees in there who are like, I'm in the trenches. This is my job.
Yeah.
This is bigger. And it's both bigger and more personal than you're making it sound like, who you're supporting and how.
Yeah, I think the walkout is going to have a much more lasting impact, especially because we know from past experience that Disney loves to give you those blink and you miss them queer characters. And if you live in like Singapore or Russia back when they were opening movies in Russia, you didn't have to blink. They would just get cut by the local authorities or whatever. So that doesn't thrill me so much. But I do like the fact that the employees are speaking out, because there are so many LGBTQ people on the payroll at Disney and, you know, paying big money to be at the parks every year and to, like, you know, go to the movies and do all the stuff that they do. It's kind of noxious. And there's a website called Popular Information that talks about, like, all the other states that also have similar gross legislation going through, where Disney also has business and they're not doing anything about those either. Like in Georgia, even though they shoot a lot of Marvel movies in Atlanta, they haven't said a peep about it. They've got, like, stores in states like Texas and Louisiana, and they're not responding to those. So this is just the tip of the iceberg of how Disney is sort of letting down the side.
On a lighter note, I can't believe I now have to care about a movie called Lightyear about Buzz Lightyear.
You don't. It's okay.
Well, if you don't, Then the terrorists will have won.
Oh, man, you can't go out on a better note than that. So we're going to take a break. But when we come back, road trip, because it's the Drive My Car episode. I like explaining my, like, references.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Vroom, vroom.
Instead of rewatching the same old sitcoms and movies that you've seen 100 times, try something new with CuriosityStream.
CuriosityStream is the entertainment brand for captivating documentaries covering every topic about our world and beyond. Look, they've got 35 curated collections handpicked by a team of experts on topics like history, technology, science, nature, society, lifestyle, and kids. CuriosityStream works on any device, so you can start streaming wherever you are, whenever you want. Look, they got shows like my man Nick Offerman has The History of Home, where he explores the past, present, and future of homes. And then they have something called Fiddlin', a foot stomping celebration of true Americana and the artistic expression. No roofs guaranteed.
They've also got one of the best deals out there right now. CuriosityStream is offering a full year subscription for just $14.99. That's for the full year with code MAXFILM, M-A-X-F-I-L-M. Go to CuriosityStream.com and use code MAXFILM.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Sivi Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Ingu King,
Alonzo Duralde.
And with the Oscars coming up, we thought we'd squeeze in one more Best Picture contender. Lucky for us, Ryusuke Hamaguchi's Drive My Car recently landed on streaming. Lucky us. Drea, would you sum up what happens in Drive My Car?
Sure, no problem. Super easy. Thank you for asking. Yeah. Drive My Car is an adaptation of a couple of Murakami shorts. We follow our main character, Yusuke, who at the beginning is in a very passionate marriage. His wife is a screenwriter. He is an actor and a director. And yet, as it unveils, we discover she is cheating on him, but he sort of knows about it. It's very complicated. And then she dies. We go to a couple of years later, and he has taken up a residency in Hiroshima a few hours away, where he is going to be directing a cast in Uncle Vanya, because, you know, why not do a Chekhov play? And from there, we see him sort of coming back to himself as a person, as an artist. And one of the vehicles for his self-actualization is the red Audi that he is assigned a
Saab.
Young... It's a red Saab, not an Audi. What do I know? I can't afford any of them. And anyway, he is assigned a young woman who as his chauffeur, and they drive these long drives every day. He listens to his dead wife's voice. They bond and become closer. All the while, he is directing this version of Uncle Vanya. And one of the actors, of course, was having an affair with the wife. You know, there's a lot going on. But also, it's very chill. And there's a lot with language, because the actors in the play are speaking different languages. I feel like I did that. I mean, that was a really tidy, you know, I feel pretty good about just... Oh God, I'm gonna later on think and be like, oh, why did I say to enjoy? Yes, Drive My Car.
Yeah, no, that was I was gonna say it was great. You're beating yourself up. You don't gotta do that.
I won't pay you a compliment.
I would never expect you to.
We'll kick things off. The movie is based on a story by Haruki Murakami. Has anyone read the story?
Nope.
I've read a ton of his stuff, and I read one of the stories that's in it. Like the wife is, they have this very interesting way of collaborating.
Oh, in I need that, to invest in that.
Yeah, she tells him stories while they're having sex, and then she can't remember them, so he remembers them and tells her the next day, and she like transcribes her story. It's sort of an oral tradition, an oral sexual tradition. Am I doing that right?
If you will.
Yeah, I mean, right, it made it worse when you did, the second version was worse. Oral tradition is fine.
I made that worse.
And then you
said
oral sexual tradition.
But man, could they have used that quote for this poster? Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I'm sure y'all have better knowledge than me, but I did look up a Wikipedia article on Uncle Vanya, you know, as Chekhov would have hoped.
Yes. The dream way for someone to absorb his work is paraphrased by someone with no credentials.
Get the Wikipedia.
Anonymously. Exactly. Yeah.
I think I did it even worse in that I read a SparkNotes summary right before the movie. Took me back to like my college days.
Oh, yeah.
So, good times.
I mainly know Uncle Vanya from the movie Vanya on 42nd Street, but it had been a while since I'd seen it.
Okay, we got it. Alonzo, you see a lot of movies. You're cool.
I'm not going to apologize for it.
Oh, he sounds like a real Uncle Vanya, doesn't he? That's how well I remember it. What I do like of the... So the Uncle Vanya is threaded through in this really fascinating way. And my muddled summary aside, there are all of these layers of storytelling and language, which is like the heart of this movie. And you're either... Your level of response to those stories is how you're going to enjoy or not this movie. And for me, I loved it. I loved the Uncle Vanya stuff. You see like rehearsals and you're spending all this time. And yes, I did put the subtitles on. I see that, Marissa. Marissa, our producer, definitely wrote in the script, Drea, did you put the subtitles on for this one? You're all very funny. And I deserve it. But you do. You have people speaking different languages. And so they're subtitled and they're acting and they're familiar with the text, but they may not be familiar with the language of the person who's their scene partner. So what I was...
All the actors, just for clarification, a lot of the actors come from different countries and they all speak their native tongue. And so the actors don't actually... know what each other are saying. I have to say, personally, I loved watching a movie about a play I would never watch. Not only because, I mean, like the Chekhov part of it is like fine, but I just like on a fundamental level do not understand the point of watching a play where the actors themselves cannot understand what each other are saying. And well, I think they were like trying to get at like a more like purely emotional response from each other. But I was also like, as a person who spends a lot of time focused on words, I like it when you are able to understand like the nuances and the inflections that they are bringing to those readings and the interpretations. Spoiler alert, I did not like this fucking movie.
We'll get there.
I really liked the concept of... I'm uncomfortable in live theater a lot. And a huge reason is anytime someone has even the most slightly wobbly of performances, I'm so overwhelmed with feeling like bad for them, I can't enjoy the play at all. And same with comics, same with all sorts. I'm like, oh no, empathy trigger. I'm vomit. I really appreciated, I was like, oh, I would actually go see a version like an Uncle Vanya with actors from different countries speaking different languages and like me just reading the English. And strangely, it's because my love of language is, oh, this way I don't have to hear what like their whatever the translation would be, I can read my English translation of it and feel those words myself and not like, oh, like I'm just struggling through the French or whatever. And with this, like, there's this repetition. He keeps coming back. Like, you hear the wife saying these lines, and that's how he's learning his dialogue, right? Learning the dialogue or becoming familiar with it or whatever.
The wife has recorded, like, the other people's lines that aren't the main characters in, like, a tape. And therefore, he just, like, puts the tape into the car. And when he's driving around, he practices his lines against the tape.
So you get the impression that even though he played Vanya, like, 2 years earlier, that he's been driving around and doing those lines to that tape anyway, just to keep hearing her voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved that, like... Hearing dialogue, it's that same thing of like, and it actually annoys me so much when movies start with a quote. I'm always like, settle down. Oh my God. Like, you're fine. But there's something about layering art and the idea of you see him at different times and in different mind states and with different people, even in the car. And then you're hearing her voice quoting this beautiful writing to you. And you, of course, it's like, it's narration, right? You hear what she said, or you read what she's saying, as it were, and you're reading it and you're then putting it on top of that moment in addition it to just existing at as text from Uncle Vanya. And that really worked for me on what language can do and how it can be both something that brings people together, but something that is very distancing.
Yeah, I mean, with me, it was funny just watching the car stuff. It was just driving me wild because I just never see how actors can do that. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, I just remember the lines by recording myself. I'm like, but what about pacing? What about pacing? What about pacing? What happens when you want to make dramatic choices?
Do you have questions
about
pacing?
Yeah. because sometimes you want to wait a beat and then they're just like, nope, I'm saying the line because this is how you recorded it. But it also, you know, was a familiarity, and I was like, I was able to put myself in his, well, no, I wasn't, because if someone cheated on me, I'd be like, nah, it's a wrap.
If his emotional commitment to this film was lost at minute 23.
And then 20 minutes later, we got the fucking opening credits, because we did not get the opening credits until 45 minutes into the movie. Yeah.
I love that, actually. This movie and Fresh kind of do the same thing, where like a significant chunk of the movie passes and then you understand that what you've just seen is kind of prologue, and then the credits happen. Yeah. And you're like, oh, right, we didn't do that yet.
No, I totally dug that. I want to know, especially if it wasn't something that you were responding to, because there's so much in here, and the idea of the languages, like, I haven't fully landed on why I think that's so special, so I'm not doing a great job of vocalizing it. But I do think, you know, to me, there's this inner element that's through all of these. All of these people that we're presented with, right? Him, our young driver, the people in the cast, like the messed up kid. I say kid, that guy's like in his mid-20s. But they all have a fundamental flaw, right? And they're all trying to, like, they've all made decisions to make better lives for themselves in one way or another. Taking this residency, doing whatever. But there's this thing that they're also all people whose identities are shaped around loving someone else. And then maybe losing that person. And I think that there was something so universal in that. Like, I found it, and it either, again, it's one of those things that either works for you or it doesn't. But it's one of those, like, afterwards that I just was ruminating on for a long time of, oh, to make these characters so unlike each other, but tying, you know, just what human connection can mean to people. Again, I wish I could give Ingu's face to everyone for... for enjoyment.
I think the reason why I think I would have really enjoyed this movie. No, I think I would have enjoyed this movie slightly more if I didn't know it was a Murakami adapted
really
movie. Mm. Yes. The reason why I say that is because I feel like I discovered his work fairly early, and then at a certain point I was like, oh, he just like repeats himself with every novel. And then I stopped being able to sort of like really get into his stuff, because all I kept seeing was like the patterns that he repeated. One of those patterns that he loves to have is that there are basically two women in like each story, one of whom is this like sexy woman who is like fucking weird and doesn't actually make sense as a character, and the other one is sort of like a younger, spunkier like sidekick character. You basically have exactly that mapping out here. The whole story of like the wife like making up these stories for her screenplays while she's having sex with him, but then she forgets by the end of the time that they have sex. Absolutely fucking ridiculous. That's not how fucking memory works. Shut the fuck up.
It's poetry. country.
It's just convenient amnesia.
Ingu keeps a pad and pen handy while having sex. So
she keeps a dictaphone.
I'm sorry, I have like a functional memory because my brain like is not from a soap opera characters. The other thing that like I really hated was that like the driver character, who is the other main female character, basically had like a bunch of trauma. And I think what was sort of like kind of like supposedly interesting was that you get sort of like three different stories from her background, and each time she opens up more, and so you sort of get this like Nanette like kind of retelling, or like this like a reframing of the story where you keep hearing the same story, but you hear like it gets closer and closer to the truth as the driver and the actor director become closer. Like, I think that's fine. That's like a good observation of how human relationships work, right? You get sort of like the superficial version, and then like the more honest version, and then like the brutal truth. But she didn't have any characteristics other than her fucking trauma. And so I was just like, I don't care about her. Like, yes, you're like a sad story. If I wanted a sad story, I can go read the fucking newspaper. Bad stuff happening in Ukraine, you guys. And so I was like, why am I like supposed to care about this character in the least? She has absolutely no characteristics.
Oh, I thought she did. Like, I loved that I was getting this full idea of who this young woman was. And you're right. A lot of it is more, it's more performance and less like, oh, here's this exposition about her. Because she has this reveals, but they're very specific, right? It's a lot. It's her mother's relationship with her and then this thing they went through and a choice she made. But I loved like just like where she sits and waits for him. And honestly, just the fact that we meet this young
woman. I'm sorry. She's a young woman and she's just literally sitting there waiting for him with nothing else to do.
And yeah, I had plenty. She's just sitting with her thoughts. You know how hard it is for people to do that, Ingu? So many people can't at all.
Ingu wanted to be playing Candy Crush.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. That would be
Alonzo,
something.
Alonzo, what did you think of her?
I found her really interesting.
Alonzo, tell me how wrong I am.
Look, you are entitled to all the things that go through your beautiful mind.
Is she?
I think the character is really fascinating. I just mainly just as sort of an enigma to be kind of like to you know, kind of get through the layers of and really get to the truth of. And, you know, I mean, yeah, Ingu describes that as though that were like that there was nothing else to her. But I think those stories are what make her the way she is. And I think she does have an arc over the course of this film, and she is not the same person at the end that we see at the beginning. So I don't know. I just found her backstory and how it reflects on her present tense version to be really fascinating. I will say this.
I'm sorry. Before I move on, and you don't have to put this in the pod, but she sort of gets like the final scene, and I have to say, I don't understand the final scene, and no one else I've talked to has been able to understand the final scene.
I love the final scene. My other final thing on this, separate from the ending, which people can look at and be confused by on their own. But you know what? The fact that when I read the description of this motion picture of, an aging director goes to a town far away where he's assigned
a young
woman.
Are you going to say you're happy that they didn't hook up?
Not even that they didn't hook up, that there wasn't even like it wasn't even on the radar. There was like no pretext that this might be a flirtation or whatever. Yeah, I am. How dare you dismissively say as if that's not a good thing, Ingu. Oh, I'm Ingu Kang. All I ever want is for the older man to hook up with the younger woman.
Listen, at least something would have happened.
How dare.
Alonzo, what were you going to say earlier?
Well, what I was going to say is, like, you know, I do like this movie a lot, but to be honest, I'm a bigger fan of an earlier Hamaguchi film called Happy Hour, which is 5 hours long, but it's about a group of middle-aged women and their friendship, and I think that what he does so well in both these films, and I need to see his other ones, but I think he is really good at taking sort of quotidian habits and you know, things that people do and make that a way to sort of see into the character. So like this guy, like the fact that he, you know, wants to drive himself, that the car is his connection to his ex-wife, or to his late wife rather, via the cassette. The way he holds rehearsals, the way that the other performers sort of like abide by his directorial style or don't. I don't know. I feel like there's so much that's revealed in just the very sort of kind of granular behavior of people. And I thought there was just a lot to dig into because of he's so interesting and the woman who's driving is so interesting. But then also all of those cast members and the theater manager, I thought was a really fascinating character. And, you know, his wife, yeah, who performs in Korean Sign Language. Like, I don't know. I like how observant he is of these very kind of tiny moments that sort of add up and give you something by the end.
If only it added up to anything more.
If he did, it surprise you, like, from where it went?
I will say, there was a part of me that at first, when we first see the character, I was like, yeah, this is going to be his new love who helps him get over, you know, his wife. But yeah, I think as you kind of saw the relationship going on, I was like, oh, okay, this is one of these joints. one of these joints. But yeah, no, I think, you know, to hop on the artistry, like Alonzo was saying, yeah, it was this was like a beautiful movie that, like, the time it takes visually telling the story is why I was like, okay, this is why it's 3 hours, because we're gonna take, and I mean that in a good way, but also mean that it was 3 hours. But I also will not complain. Because I sat through the Batman.
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Alonzo.
Hey, look, I sat through the Batman too, but I just, you know, I was more fidgety during the Batman than I was during this.
Yeah, once we get into past the credits, I was like all in. I do think, like, when it was setting up, it was just like moving at a way, and I think it was purposeful, you know, to like show, to kind of like let us get like drawn in. But I really feel like once we got to the island and saw everything and learned about the creepy young dude and how he's a creep, which before this is one thing I wanted to mention, that audition, can you imagine doing an audition with someone and they're grabbing up your face like that? And I was like, what? And then you see and you're like, oh, because he's a creep.
Yeah, he nailed it. vote.
Look, I know it's about to be an amazing, you know, filled with compliments review, but we'll start off with Ingu Kang.
If I was talking to a friend, I would say skip it. If I am talking to the general public who might be interested in the movie because of Oscar tension or because it showed up on like 2 million top 10 lists for 2021, I would probably say stream it, and I would say stream it specifically because then you can take a bunch of breaks, which you might need. I personally saw it in the movie theater, for which I was really happy because I don't know if I would have finished the movie.
And you would have never got to that ending you love so much.
That terrible ending. So yeah, who doesn't love a 3-hour, one episode TV show?
Ouch.
You know who doesn't? This girl. I would be a screen it. In fact, I would have loved to have screened it, but I don't screen anything right now. This worked for me. I don't know if it's, I have been a reader my whole life, not to brag, but I know how to read. And there was something about the use of language and the idea of connection and of having words have meaning, like a palimpsest that like means something, and then the next time, like, even the wife, the story that she's giving is just full insight and questions about their relationship. I was fascinated to see where her story went, like the story she was saying, and then we got a reprise of it with the young man later that kind of blew my mind. So I found it very enjoyable. It was my flavor.
All right, Alonzo, thoughts?
Definitely a screen it. I agree with Dre. I think the writing is exquisite. I think it's beautifully shot and composed, and edited. I mean, just the storytelling craft here, I think, is just like top notch. I would like to be able to screen it at some point. I think it is a movie that really loans itself to to losing yourself in it as much as possible. I mean, yes, streaming does. If blocking out 3 hours of time is a difficult thing to do because you've got, you know, kids or, you know, work responsibilities or whatever, then, you know, you could break it up. But I think it's the kind of movie you not only want to see in one sitting, but if you could see it, you know, sort of in the dark and really subsumed in it, so much the better. So I hope to get to do that one day.
Yeah, for me, it's a screen it. And, you know, if you're like Drea and you wish that you could have screened it, get your Max Film bingo cards ready, then make sure you have a 75-incher surround sound setup like I did. Now with more room because, you know, my office is in my office. So I've been able to spread, make sure the sound bounces the right way. And it was a great cinematic experience. And I was like, yeah, people need to be seeing this in the cinema, which I call it. I don't go to the movies. I go to the cinema. The cinema.
Wow. Type. I guess only I love the movies.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Carrie, is it?
Oh, yes. Hi, I'm Carrie.
I am Psychic Ross, and I will be reading you this evening.
Oh, interesting. Well, okay. I co-host a podcast. It's called Ono, Ross, and Carrie.
Yes, I'm sensing that. The spirits are telling me. It is a show about
poodles. Well, it's about like fringe science and spirituality and claims of the paranormal. And oh, you knew that.
You do research online.
But more importantly, like we do in-person investigations.
In-person investigate as well.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
See?
Me and my friend, this is so weird, my friend Ross, same name as you.
Weird.
He and I just go and try them all out. And actually, we've gone to a number of psychics. And to be honest with you, it's a lot like this. It's called Ono, Ross, and Carrie. They can find it at MaximumFun.org.
I could have told you that.
Schmanners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, schmanners. Get it?
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm Yosef Iwadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Ingu King,
Drea Clark.
On Twitter last week, Nina Serafina got a big conversation started by asking, what's a comedic performance you think should have at least been nominated for an Oscar? So we're going to weigh in on that question and hand out some honorary Max Film Oscars, a.k.a. Max Filmskers, to Funny Stuff. Who's got one?
I love this because, I mean, it is true. Like, we've touched on previously how the range of films of what's considered an Oscar film has kind of broadened or shifted or evolved. But yeah, comedies always get the shaft, and I think comedy performances do. And one of the first things that came to mind was Raul Julia in Addams Family Values. Addams Family is the first one, and then Addams Family. He's so good as Gomez. And that's, again, that's taking, it's not just comedy, it's camp, and it's based on like a pop culture, like a TV nostalgia. Everybody sort of has an idea of what the character should be. And yet he does such a beautiful, thorough thing. Like, you think of like his fanatic devotion to Morticia and his dancing and his like wild eyes. Like, he, the whole tone of what they are and what their creepiness represents, it's in what Raul Julia is doing. I think I was like, oh, I fully believe, because he does all the fencing. I'm like, I can see him cutting someone's head off. You know what I mean? Oh, like, yeah. You need that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Oh, man. I mean, once I say the actor's name, you're going to know which movie it is. And you know I'm going with my man John Goodman in The Big Lebowski. Portrayal of Walter is like, it's just like, so, it's just like, it's, he both plays this like larger than life character who you believe is real. Like everyone's has met a real life Walter, and just he had someone who truly thinks they are right. you're looking at this person and you're hearing what he's saying and you're like, this is all out of control, yet to you it completely makes sense, and I'm the crazy one for not being on board.
That's funny, because me and Ingu's entire friendship is based on the energy of her saying something to me like, calmer than you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the Walter, like, cool. The obviously you get the more like, that's what you get. Yeah,
yeah.
No, he's so good in that. He's
what are you even talking about?
The Big Lebowski.
No, I'm kidding. I was trying to do that thing.
Oh my God, that's how well she does it. That's what I'm saying. Every single time I reply literally, and she's like, you're an idiot, Donnie.
Yeah.
I'm the Donnie. God.
You're out of your element. No. You're like a child walking into a...
I've really cracked the code of what represents us, and it doesn't look good for me, so...
When Jesse Plemons got his Oscar nomination this year for Power of the Dog, I was like, well, that's great. He's terrific in that film. But I think we all know that this is really just the Academy making up for the snub of his performance in Game Night.
Yes!
A great modern comedy, and his performance is delectably unhinged.
He's so good in that. Why I like that the comedy, I'm all of these performances, I'm like, you know what I really apparently like? People who are really funny and I'm also terrified of. I guess that's the character that works for me.
Well, I was just going to say, you think of you know, comic performances as being sort of like wild and unhinged, and he's unhinged, but it's so controlled. And it's so unblinkingly like not responding to anything else and so focused on his, you know, internal nuttiness, and that it just gets funnier and funnier as the film proceeds, and then every time I go back and watch it again.
He's so doing his own thing in that movie. Like, he's calibrated to a pitch no one else hears, but he's unwavering in it, and it works.
For sure.
And that's a leap. Yeah.
Bring it home, Ingu.
Yeah, you gotta pick.
Now I feel very like pressured to pick a woman because everyone else.
I have one in mind that I'll do as an honorable mention. So all you right. don't have to.
Well, I don't know why, but I thought this question referred only to 2021 movies, and so I was like really thinking hard. And there are three performances I will shout out very quickly. Two of them are in the same movie. The best movie of 2021.
Drive My Car.
After Power of the Dog, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar.
Yes. Yeah,
I watch Edgar's Song with Jamie Dornan at least once a month. Like, it is currently stuck in my head. Also, Kristen Wiig in that movie, absolutely delightful. Give her a fucking Oscar. But I think one of my very, very, very favorite performances of 2021 was actually Simon Rex in...
Yes.
Red Rocket?
Yes, in Red Rocket. Where he plays like an absolute sociopath who has no idea that he's a sociopath. And because of it, like, the movie really veers between sort of like black comedy and like sheer horror. And like, that's all because of him, dude. And like, I think like that movie is like not as great as some of like Sean Baker's other movies. But that performance is magical.
He is so good in that.
That performance, I always relate it to Kirk Douglas in Ace in the Hole. Like, just somebody who is so incredibly self-serving and utterly monstrous, and yet you cannot stop watching them, and you just are dying to find out who they're going to run over next in the pursuit of their own like selfish awful agenda.
And I like you categorizing it as a comedy performance or a comedic performance, because as much as that film, it's sort of splitting several genres, but what he's doing is consistently funny in unexpected ways. Yeah, I dig that. Okay, female shout outs to Emily Blunt in The Devil Wears Prada.
Ooh.
Because that was like a star making tone. Like, so many people would have made that just a forgettable, like, oh, and there was this other woman and she's just so good. And old Reese Withers in Election.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Reese Witherspoon in Election.
Yeah.
Hall of
basically
Famer.
Playing a young Andrea Diane Clark. That's a lot of my energy. If you were wondering what how cool I was in high school, it's a lot of it's right there. But I think she was so good in that. That's a lot.
I wish I could say I was surprised.
No one will be surprised to hear this.
But you own up to it, so that's the important thing.
I do. I've really come a long way. I'm much more of a Raul Julia now.
How many teachers' lives have you ruined, Drea?
Not enough.
All right. Well, with that, we'll close that out and move on to staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Alonzo, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Ingu, you should probably cover your ears because it's another Haruki Murakami adaptation. Not only that, but it's a Murakami adaptation that is also named for a Beatles song. And I'm talking about Norwegian Wood, starring the great Rinko Kikuchi from the genius Vietnamese director Tran Anh Hung. And a movie that I love that I think nobody ever talks about. Nobody remembers that it happened, but I was a big fan of it and love to plug it when I can. And this just seemed like the perfect place to do it. Yeah, it came out in 2010. And it is, as Inga will probably tell you, a movie that has two prominent female characters, one of whom is the wacky one and one of them is not. But nonetheless, not having read any Murakami, I didn't realize this was a trope he'd done to death. I'm a big fan of Rinko Kikuchi movies, especially when she has almost no dialogue because she doesn't need it. She's so incredibly expressive. There's always so much going on in her face. This is a film that I just think is really moving and beautiful. I'm a big Tran Anh Hung fan. I wish more of his films got more play in the U.S. or that he made more of them, but I will take what I can get, and it is currently streaming on Tubi, believe it or not.
Yes, you love Tubi.
Tubi gang, Tubi gang, Tubi gang.
Also, I'll say John Irving has the same thing with the same two female archetypes that are in every single thing, and they're pretty much the same as that. So, sadly, it's a territory that's been well-trod.
I will go next. I am going to recommend Everything Everywhere All at Once, the new Michelle Yeoh movie. I saw it because I love cinema, unlike everyone else in this podcast, in the theater. It was a magical experience, like theatrically, because the movie is so over the top that it is. And also, I got to see it with a preview screening where there were if you ever go to like a screening that's critics only, oftentimes it is like a very muted experience because critics, shocker, tend to be an unimpressed bunch. And this was a group that was like literally whooping at the screen and like doing standing ovations like in the middle of the movie. It was just like a very like raucous crowd, and it was an experience I haven't experienced in a couple of years. And so it was really great. I found the movie incredibly, surprisingly moving for a sci-fi fantasy movie about like multiverses. And apparently, who knew, the multiverse is a amazing metaphor for like the sort of like sliding doors immigration experience, and it really like milked the shit out of that. And also, this movie introduced me to an actress that I liked as much as Michelle Yeoh in this movie, who is Stephanie Hsu, who plays her daughter. And also, if you are not yet convinced, Jamie Lee Curtis is at her absolute most unhinged in this movie. I never want to see Jamie Lee Curtis not like leaping from the top of the stairs to go punch someone at the bottom of the stairs. Like, if that's not happening, like, I'm not interested anymore. So
she does that in Freaky Friday as well.
Yeah.
That's a great move.
I mean, who wouldn't with Lindsay Lohan?
That movie was directed by my sweet baby boys, the Daniels, Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert, who are the loveliest, dreamiest boys. Please go support them and watch it.
Except Drea won't.
Some of us are still concerned about something called COVID, Ingu. So I guess if we all were as blasé about you and just like, ooh, I don't wear face masks, I just go lick everyone that I see, I'm Ingu.
Ooh, that's for losers. I'm going to spring break in Cancun. Ooh.
I'll lick your face. Okay, I do have a movie pick, not just a taunt for Ingu. My film that I'm choosing a staff pick is coming out the day this releases, March 25th. I programmed this at Bentonville last year, and it picked up a Spirit Award this year. It's called 7 Days. It's directed by Rashan Sethi and his boyfriend, Karan Soni, who many of you will recognize as the cab driver from Deadpool, plays the lead in this, along with Geraldine Viswanathan. God, I hope I'm saying it right, because she's so talented. It's a very low-budget film. It's one of the very few films with an actual COVID narrative that I enjoyed. They are two people who were set up on a prearranged date by their Indian parents, and they have nothing in common. And then all of a sudden, coronavirus lockdown hits, and they have time together of bonding and insight and hijinks. And I think it's quite charming and a low-budget charmer. Please support the indies if it's playing near you, or if you're listening to this later and can find it rentable or viewable digitally. 7 Days!
Oh.
That also sounds like such a nice salve after Love is Blind season 2.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't seen that, but yes.
Yeah, and my pick is kind of a smidgen of a cheat, but I'm only counting it because it was a film at Sundance, which is going to be, but it is a episodic on Netflix, Genius, a Kanye trilogy. The first episode, which is as long as a movie, it was available at Sundance, and you can watch them all on Netflix. And it makes you feel like it really, because you see where he comes from, and even though we know where he's at now, that's, you know, Kanye's been my problematic fave for a long time. I actually did not like him when he first came out, and to see the era from when I didn't like him and confirming why I didn't, and then kind of seeing it, but also just, if anything, seeing like how much his mom loved him and supported him, and like that she like walked him to these like hip hop areas and was like, "This is my son. You got to take care of him." It's gonna make you feel a lot of things. It's gonna make you think a lot of things, and it's worth a watch. And I'll leave it at that. But also, shout out to the dude who made it, Cootie Simmons, who like, the only reason this exists is because he was like, yeah, I'm going to start recording this kid. He feels like he's going to be famous. And he was right. You know, how many like bad versions of these are there where it's like, you know, some one hit wonder kid with all this footage, but he never got famous. So like, they're just like, all right, well, I guess I'll hit delete.
Yeah, somebody followed me around for a few years there.
I want to see that. I want to see that.
It's a lot of boot just like bookstores and going to movie theaters,
skincare regimens,
a lot of skincare. It's a real, real thriller. Yeah.
All right. Well, Ingu, so great to have you back. You know, just all the way from the Bay. Now you from the Bay to L.A. What it do?
We're glad you were here, Ingu. Yeah. We love you. We love when you come here.
Even if you're out being a super spreader in movie theaters, we're still thrilled to hear from you.
I have a mask on the entire time, so I don't know what you're talking about.
She's conscientious.
All right.
I kid.
Dre and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. Always good to be up in this booth, this digital virtual booth. And soon we'll be back in that hot booth next to each other where we can see each other.
Are you guys going back?
No, there's no
plan. Describe soon, my guy.
Yeah, I just said someday.
We're going to lick a face.
Yeah.
Just no. I'm gonna be just.
We're gonna do the Ingu, which is to lick everything in there. Yeah.
All right. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film, or our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org, or voice memo for the hotline. Our producer is Marissa Flaxmark. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun.
Bye-bye. Woo-hoo!
And please do not absolutely use to Ingu as a word for to lick someone's face.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.